איש אשר לא הלך בעצה אשר שרואים ובדרך חתם לא עמוד, מושב לעצים לא יושב, כי מסרס עניני חפצו וסורסו יגע ימון ולילה. לא עית שסול על פלגי מים אשר פריו ייתן בעיתו ועולה לא ייבול וכל אשר יעשה יצליח. לכן הרשרים כי אם כמות אשר תדפן רוח, על כן לא יקומו רשרים במשפט וחתם בדס צדיקים, כי יודע אני לא דרך צדיקים ודרך רשעים תובד. We've come to Per Kovod Achron, Rabbi Solomon Weinberger, Rav Shlomo ben Rav Yoshua, patriarch of one of our most illustrious families and one of the great Klei Kodesh who served the people, the Jewish people, with love and dedication for so many decades. We mourn today with his beloved brother, Rav Sachya Weinberger, shouldn't be well, and with his children, Mona and Itzi Weinberger, and grandchildren, Joshua and Tal, Moshe and Aryan, Dov and Tamar, Sari and Shmuel Jacoby, Don and Naomi, and Aviva and Rav Yosef Weinberger, and with his beloved children, Rabbi Pinchas and Hadassah Weinberger, and grandchildren Esther, Mordechai, Tzachi, and Sarachano. Rabbi Weinberger left us Beseva Tova, but he left a great void as well. You know, the Seder this week, when Paro asks that famous question to Moshe Rabbeinu, Miva mi halchim, who do you want to go to serve Hashem in the Midbar? Moshe answers, Bin Arenu vizkeinenu neilech. We go with our young and we go with our old. And the Chiddush to Paro, the Mefarshim say, was Ne'arenu. It's understood that the Zkenim are going to be involved in Avodas Hashem. But to get the youth involved was an anomaly. That was then. Today I think the Chiddush is to the modern world that Bizkeinenu Ne'lech, that we live because of our Zkenim. The elderly are treasures, the sources of wisdom and experience and above all guidance. We got to know Rabbi Weinberger when he reached the level of Zeshekana Chochma, the level of Zikna, moving to Tinek when he was close to 80 years old. But we know as well that he came to this country as a young child, was a Musmach of Torah Vadas, a Talmud of Rav Shlomo Heyman and Rav Reuven Grozovsky. He was a Rav first in Babylon, Long Island. One of the, he helped found Hank, the Hebrew Academy of Nassau County. Then for a few years in Portland, Oregon, where he kept the shul. And the Jews of Portland, faithful to Torah. And then for over 40 years, as the Mar Dasra of Tiferet Israel in Passaic, where he led and taught and set an example for generations of love of Torah and love of Klal Yisrael. It's obvious that when he moved to Tinek, he came to shul day and night without exception and became one of the mainstays of the Daf Yomi, gave occasional drushos on Shabbos and weekdays, shirim as well on occasion. His mastery of Torah was complete. It was one thing that I saw and that I heard. When he taught Torah, he was filled with joy and enthusiasm. He loved ideas. He appreciated a good drusha when he taught Torah. When he learned Torah, he was filled with Ritcha Daraisa, with the fury of Torah, with a passion to seek the Amita Shel Torah, with a relentless drive to understand the Gemara or the Maimer Chazal, to clarify a Svara. He was relentless. He had access to Kol HaTorah Kula, and he used all of it to fully comprehend any statement in Chazal. Those who gave the Daf Yomi, those who gave drashos or shiurim in shul always had to walk the intellectual gauntlet of Rabbi Weinberger, of passing muster with what was being said. So I know it scared some people off from giving shiurim, but it made others sharper. He would sit very often with his eyes closed, but listening to every word that was being said, and comprehending and measuring and assessing and evaluating every idea. To me personally, he was always a source of great encouragement and support. If bin arenu vizkeinenu nelech, then when the zaken leaves us, it leaves a great void as well, a void that can and will be filled, at least partially, by his wonderful sons and his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren as well. He made enormous contributions to Klal Yisrael, Jews across the world, especially the Jewish community of Passaic, and then to Teaneck, and then to Bnei Yeshurun as well. And he'll never be forgotten. And his memory should therefore inspire all of us to a life of Torah and Tefillah and Gemilas Chasadim. Tehei Nishmaso Tzura B'Tzrachayim, may his soul be bound up in the bond of eternal life. V'nomar Amen. Let me call upon first my dear colleague Rabbi Aaron Zatz to recite the Kapitel Tehillim. Words of Hesped, I want to call upon Rabbi Weinberger's beloved son, my dear colleague, Rabbi Pinky Weinberger.
Before my mother's levaya, one of my friends keeps reminding me that my father said loud enough for him to hear. He said to me, "Masat nishnarish," right before I was about to speak. And what I think he meant by that was two things. First of all, my father despised any false showing of emotion, dramatics, anything that was not sincere. And he didn't want me to put on anything. And also he despised exaggeration of a person's religiosity, any pretense to intellectual greatness, and he wanted me to be accurate and not to put on anything in the history. As was mentioned, a few months ago, we lost my beloved uncle, Dov Weinberger. And I couldn't help but notice, that my distinguished cousin, Rabbi Mordechai Weinberger, didn't speak at the Levaya. And during Shiva, I asked him how come he didn't speak at the Levaya. And he said to me, because he felt he wasn't Roy to speak about his father. He's a very smart person and a very wise man. But I was thinking myself that perhaps I should follow his example. But I was afraid that later I would regret it. So I just want to make some brief points. First of all, from the bottom of my heart and with great sincerity, I want to express my hakaras hatov to my brother Itzi and my sister-in-law Mona for the years, decades, that they took care of my father. For a while, I remember at my grandmother's levaya, my father got up. My father was so devoted to my mother. And his brothers, both my deceased uncle and my uncle Psafi, Badal Chaim Tovim Baruchim, had such tremendous kibud aim. But my father was osek with my mother. And he said at the Levaya, he says, "I was osek b'mitzvah," so he felt he was pater min ha-mitzvah, but he thanked my uncles for taking such great care of my grandmother. And for a while, I was on the other side of town, and I was Osik B'mitzvah, at least trying to be. And my brother and sister-in-law took such care of my father's every need, as was mentioned. It became a time that I became Pater Min HaMitzvah. I mean, I was no longer Osik in the mitzvah, and I tried my best to fill in a little bit to try to help. Itzi's a son, and a wonderful son, and an example for everybody, Lord Kibrave is. But Mona is a daughter-in-law, and I've never met somebody like her. The care, anybody who knows her schedule, and what she's accomplished in the family that she built, and how she gives and gives and gives. But for my father, she did everything all the time. In his illness, she made special meals 3 times a day. That's while working full-time and being a grandmother and a mother and taking care of my brother and taking care of the household and giving to the community. The whole family will never forget. And we'll be grateful forever for everything you did for my father, Mona. My wife was my greatest support, and I thank her for supporting me through the difficult times during my father's illness. And all my children were loved by my father, and they loved him very much. But I want to thank my son Safi for helping me when I couldn't do everything that I should have been doing for my father, filling in the gaps and giving me chizuk and helping me along the way. I also want to express hakaras hatov, and I'm going to leave out names, and not deliberately, but even though in the last years he no longer used him, I have an abiding hakaras hatov to Dr. Gardner Schwartz for the years of taking care of my father with great love and respect and maintaining his dignity and making sure he was healthy and got the best of care. My father had a very special friend who was a balabas and a chavrusa, and a true friend, Dr. Restler, who used to continue to learn with my father and take care of my father and look into him, and the whole family appreciates that very much. The whole community knows about my cousin, who is my doctor and the family's doctor and wisest doctor I know, who we leaned on so much, Zelig, Dr. Judah Weinberger, and we're very, very grateful to him. And there were so many other doctors in shul who cared and tried to do everything they can and offer advice. I don't want to leave out names, Dr. Raffwager, and then there was a Dr. Westreich who brought my father to Dat Yomi on Shabbos, and there were the boys in the back, and it was Leon Miller who met me and helped me get my father into the car, so I went to Minchamar with the greatest dignity all the time, with a great love. And I don't want to miss the opportunity to express my hakaras hatov to each and every one of them. And if there's anybody's name I left out, it was not deliberate. There's another hargasha that I want to mention. I remember my grandmother, Alel HaShalom, my father's mother, lived to over 100 years old. And we were all at the Levaya, and I couldn't get over the fact that the mixed blessing of living to 100 years old, but there was nobody at the Levaya who really knew my grandmother. She had outlived all of her peers were not there. Anybody who was at the Levaya was there for the kovod of my father and his brothers and for the mishpacha. But nobody really appreciated who my grandmother was. I just heard about him. And as my nephew just mentioned, as I looked out over here, that's not the case. Thank God my father lived, should have lived longer, but thank God, he's very grateful for his long life. But he has friends who appreciate him, even though he's much older than him, who are present in the room, who gain from him, who experienced with him, who learned from him, who joked with him, and who will miss him. And that's also a bracha. As my nephew mentioned, we have a special hakaras hatov to this community. Because when a man retires and has been a center of a lot of attention and a lot of respect, and moves into a new community. He's usually in the shadows. He's Itzi's son, he's Mona's father-in-law. But here, this community embraced him, showed him great love and respect, and learned from him. He gave, but he also received a great deal, and from the Rav, and so the family is entirely grateful to this special community. I can't speak about my father as a person objectively. He was my hero. I loved him. I worshipped him. I respected him. I learned from him. But there are a few points I just want to make. The rabbi mentioned he had a special relationship with the Gedolei Torah. He had tremendous ahavas haTorah. My uncle could either confirm it or not, but I remember visiting my grandmother and always asking for stories and descriptions of my father in his youth. And my grandmother told me, my grandmother Alasham told me, that as a young boy growing up and in his teens, my father would learn Yom V'Layla. On Shabbos, he would speak no sicha b'teila, and he would sit at the desk all day learning. And my grandmother was frustrated. She wanted him to go out and get some air, and she couldn't encourage him to get out of the house. So she used to have a nickname for him, and that nickname was Bilam's Eisel, which means Bilam's donkey, because he just wouldn't move. He would just sit and learn the whole time. My father got out into the real world afterwards, and it's always found it very, very interesting. He was an anomaly, my father. You would not know it. My father's a very shy, introverted person. And he really doesn't have a need for a lot of friends. He used to have friends socially because my mother needed friends. He used to go visit another rabbi in town. They would play Scrabble for an hour because my mother needed some social life. He would leave afterward and say, wasted, and pocketed the tug, pocketed the night. And the host would hear that and get frustrated by him saying that. He used to say that even after he visited my grandmother, Gepatid Mechato. And she wanted to... Because, as was mentioned, he valued time. But my point is, personally, his idea of a vacation of Gan Eden was to sit under a tree, have a sefer, and sit and learn undisturbed all day. So that was his personality. And it amazed I remember when we were sitting shiva for my mother, my kids could not get over. There were Alta Yidnas who came, spoke to my father, and spoke about my mother. What he would normally call nonsense and have no interest, and he feigned interest in everything that they had to say, and they didn't understand why he wouldn't listen to them when they wanted to talk their childish ideas, and he had so much patience for his balabatim and gave them all of the respect and love that they needed. He really loved people. He didn't need them, but he loved them, and he appreciated it, and he appreciated simple people. He appreciated Gedolei Torah, but he appreciated just simple Jews, religious, not religious, and he cared about them, and he helped them quietly. He did a lot of people favors, and he never talked about it. People knew they could count on him, and they could confide in him, and he would do for them. Always bothered me as a child. I knew my father loved learning. I knew what a Talmud Chacham he was. And most of his life he had a kehillah. Pesach changed a lot. When I came into Pesach, I remember there were people who used to come around the back door and cry to my father. There was intermarriage in the community. There were people going out with non-Jews. There were very simple people. My father would console all of them. It's a different community than it was now. And he would deal with very simple problems. He would give what he would call drushes at a baser day, which today would be considered empty drushes with not a great deal of Torah content. But that's what the community needed, and that's what was needed to reach people at that time. But it always frustrated me that he never really had an audience to appreciate who he was and to share the Torah that he could give them. It was only toward the end of his Rabbonis that Pesach changed. The yeshiva Gedola came into Pesach, and he loved the yeshiva. For many years, he learned Sturm in the yeshiva with the Rosh Kailu, the Gershom Wiesenfeld, Zeifel Tzadik Lebracha, and he had enjoyed a great friendship with the Rosh Yeshiva there. He loved the yeshiva. We used to have two boys eating at our table for many years, every day in the yeshiva. And then people became more knowledgeable, and only toward the end of his Rabbonis that he was able really to say a real vart, I remember his Shabbos HaGadol drushes, his Shabbos Tshuva drushes. I was disappointed, but that's what the community needed. People were Talmidei Chachamim, then he would talk what they needed. There was a certain frustration. It's just the way that life works, that the Kehillah only changed toward the end of his Kehillah, his Rabbanis. But he did find and enjoyed so much the camaraderie and the learning. A lot of people, I remember this, well, I won't mention the name of the member who used, when I was a rabbi on the other side of town, used to ask me when my father was going to visit me for Shabbos, because he was on to say the Daf Yomi on Shabbos. And if we found out that my father was coming to visit me for Shabbos, we'd go, yes. Because he knew that my father would not be there to criticize and to take him apart during his Daf Yomi brush, because he demanded excellence from anybody when they spoke. But here in this community, he had an opportunity to share on a higher level, as the rabbi said, to raise the level of many people's learning, and many people have mentioned that to me. My father was extremely private and didn't like to talk about himself, didn't like the showing of personal emotion and love, family members publicly. As I mentioned before, it bothered him to show off in that way, or even to express it publicly. But his devotion to my mother and the care that he showed for my mother for decades, and it often used to frustrate me because he gave up so much. And I often wondered whether he was frustrated about it. I once mentioned to Itzi that, and then about a year after my mother's passing, he once said to the family, there's not a day that goes by that he doesn't miss my mother. And he was such a wonderful husband, such a good person. And that's a side of my father that nobody sees and nobody knows except our family. You know, my parents were very good to us as kids. Itzi brought a lot of friends home, you know, who I got to know. And my parents allowed me to bring a lot of my friends home for Shabbos. Often, some of my friends are here. And it always struck my friends that, because they came from New York, and their rabbis were a little bit different. My father, as a model of a rabbi, they were not used to, because he was very frank. He was very open, and he had absolutely no pretense. So, for example, in the 60s, when there was a parade for Soviet Jewry, or there could have been some kind of a public forum. So he used to make an announcement to his balabatim, something like this. He says, you guys are not going to do anything significant with your time anyway, so make sure to go tomorrow. I have more important things to do with my time. But he meant it sincerely, openly, without any pretense. And that's the type of person he was. It astounded my friends. But That's who he was. He was a totally sincere man. There are other things I want to say, but I'm just going to end with this. I remember when my saintly Zayna, the Dolna Rebbe, Rabbi Yisachar Beresh Rubin, was Nifter. My father said a very brief hesped for him. And he said as follows. Chazal say, Mesa of Aben Mevar Shtayim, that when a person loses a parent, can make two brachas. One bracha is Hatova Meitiv, because of the Yerusha, the monetary Yerusha you're going to get. And the other bracha is Baruch Tayin HaEmes. My Zayda didn't have any Yerusha to speak of, so my father said that the Shver didn't have any Gashmistic Yerusha, but he had a very great Geistiga Yerusha. He had a great spiritual Yerusha. He was a great Oyvet Hashem. He was a great in Chassidus. And he gave that over to his Mishpacha. And I can say also that my father left us, his family, a great Geistiga Yerusha. A Yerusha of Torah, of goodness, of humanity, of lack of pretense, of appreciation of Klal Yisrael. Yehi Zichro Baruch.
Call upon Rabbi Weinberger's beloved grandson, Moshe Weinberger, for some words of hesped. Often when extolling the sheer brilliance of a person in a certain subject matter, people say he has forgotten more math or more Torah than you will ever know. But this simply wasn't true about my Zayde Zichron Levracha. You see, he never forgot anything. He let you know it also. His body finally gave out on him, but until his final day, he remained one of the most brilliant people I had ever encountered. Which is why someone like me, who was wholly unqualified to extol and expand upon his greatest maila, that he was, as we have heard, a Talmud Chacham's Talmud Chacham, this is a loss for all of Klal Yisrael, one that could much better be explained by my uncle or my brother Josh and all others more qualified in the world of Torah. So I am going to leave that part of them to them. I prefer to use my time to focus on how special it was to be Rabbi Weinberger's grandson who didn't connect with him over Torah. My grandfather was just 49 years old when I was born, 2 weeks shy of his 50th birthday, and I remember him as a vibrant, sophisticated, respected, and distinguished scholar, one who never, ever left the house without a tie, a jacket, and a hat, and someone whose mere presence in the room commanded attention and respect. These were the things I noticed as a little boy. But to me, he was simply Zayde, or Zayde from Passaic, as we would call him, to distinguish from Zayde from Boston. And he was always ready for a quick repartee about the Giants or the Red Sox. I remember visiting his home in Passaic, a Jewish community that simply would not exist today were it not for his unbelievable work. And I remember, with Zadie's full consent, jumping off the top of the side of the stairs in his living room onto the couch with Josh over and over again, happily playing until Bobby would come in and say, Shlema, they're going to break their necks. And then he would make us stop, only until Bobby left the room again. And I remember sitting in his office in the basement of Tiferet Israel, his shul, the only shul in Passaic at the time, sitting at his desk, occasionally with the cigar in his mouth that I would fetch for him, and always doing one of two things, studying a blot of Gemara or writing a drusha on his yellow pads of paper, always on the yellow pads of paper. In later years, I was always amazed at how he nailed his drusha on the first try. He never needed whiteout or crossouts. It was really something else. I didn't notice it at the time.
As a Zaidi, he didn't do sitter plays or chumash plays or birthday parties. That really wasn't his thing. Shiny $50 bill on my birthday was always something. Maybe that's what got me interested in business. He showed me what was important at a young age. And his life was simple and meaningful and repetitive every day. He learned Torah. He took such loving care of my grandmother, and he tended to his congregation. That is how I remembered my grandfather growing up. So when the time came, and Josh and I were old enough to learn with him, I remember the joy in his face when we began to set up a routine. I think we were in fourth or fifth grade, and Zaidi would drive out to our house and make the time on Monday evenings, and he would learn with me for an hour and Josh for an hour. And then he would take us for Carvel. This was the plan. How lucky was I? An hour of unfettered access to a gadol ador, my own Zaidi, in my own home. Of course, to no one's surprise, while I was excited about the ice cream, there was no way I was going to do an hour of learning after school, no matter who it was with. So the hour-hour split morphed quite quickly into an hour and a half for Josh and a half hour to me, and then an hour and 45 minutes for Josh and 15 minutes for me. And finally, just to humor him, I would sit with Zaidi at the dining room table with the Gemara open, talking sports for just a few minutes before Josh, peeking in, waiting, finally would usurp the entire 2 hours and then some, and would only end when I would poke myself in to remind Zaidi that Carvel will be closing soon and we have to get there because we learned so well for the last 2 hours. I'm not here publicly shaming myself out of regret over a missed opportunity, though I do most definitely do regret. But I'm trying to illustrate just how important to the rest of my life my grandfather's approach was. He never, never made me feel any less loved or less special than Josh during any of these Mondays, or in any of the many, many, many summers and days where he would spend hours and hours and hours learning with Josh, and at a minute with me. And several years ago, I actually made a siyum on Bava Kamma with my longtime chavrusa Yaki, and I finally asked him then why he didn't push me, why did he let me get away with it? And he looked at me, dismissed it, and finally he just said, very clearly, you weren't ready and you weren't interested. He taught me that we're all different. This is the way we should raise our children. This is the way that we have to understand people. And one of the things that I knew about my Zaidi and all of his congregants and the way he would deal with them, which we would sometimes get a glimpse of when we were in the house, is that he taught us that people are different and that's okay. Not forcing that issue when I was younger allowed me not to be turned off completely. And no, I can't hold a candle to my brother Josh. I probably couldn't have even if I did it when it comes to learning. But I do keep a routine Seder to this day as he let me develop at my own pace. Other memories. Ironically, my relationship with my Zaidi led to an early love of funerals and unveilings. You see, a funeral or a Sunday unveiling for a member of Zaidi's Pesach community often yielded two things. Number one, a time-efficient payday for Zaidi. He did appreciate making money, especially if it's something that did not take a lot of his time and take him away from learning. And two, something I cherish even more, said morning family often wouldn't be able to use their giant tickets, and they would give them to Zaidi to see as he would use as he would see fit, and he would often take me to Giant Stadium to the game. It was always sad when someone passed away. Zaidi made sure that I understood that. But in my young mind, it was a real waste if it happened in the off season. My sharpest memory, and again, I use my memory for the wrong things, but God made me this way and I can't control it. But I remember the date because it was the day before my father's birthday. It was October the 30th, 1983. And Zaidi hit what I thought was the funeral jackpot, Cowboy Giant tickets. The only issue was that the graveside service was supposed to begin at 11:30 and the game started at 1. And I didn't want to be late. Zaidi told me to not worry, it will all work out. And Zaidi parked the car, and I, like a little dog in the front seat, you could sit in the front seat back then, he rolled down the window so I wouldn't suffocate, and he told me very sternly, do not make a sound, do not leave the car. And I watched peeking out as he officiated over the service, and he consoled the mourners, and he spoke, and it seemed like an eternity, but he finally came back, and he told me, good boy, And we sped away to the stadium, and we walked in right when the kickoff was happening. And this is where problem two occurred. Because as we got into the fourth quarter, it was a close game. I think the Cowboys were winning 24-20, and Zadie said, "We have to go. We have to make a minchamar of minyan." And I was not having any part of it. And I begged and I pleaded, and he said, "Okay, we'll give the stinking Cowboys one more drive." And Danny White hit Drew Pearson for the touchdown, I think, to go up 11 points. And we sped walked to the car. And as we were walking there, we heard another groan from the crowd indicating the Cowboys scored again. And Zadie said, "I told you we could have left already 20 minutes ago." And I remember Danny White had four or five touchdown passes. And we probably could look this up on Google. It's probably a 7-3 game, and I'm misremembering everything, and my mind's playing tricks on me. But Zadie sped home, very worried. "We have to get there. We have to get there." We got to a shul. We went to the basement. And in the basement were exactly five members of his congregation, four of which were saying Kaddish at the time, and all worried that they would not have a minyan. You understand, and Passaic was very different back then. This was the only Mincha Marav minyan in all of Passaic, New Jersey. Zadie quickly told me to go run and get his phone book, and I got his phone book, and I got his rotary phone, and he started telling me numbers to dial. And Zadie dialed, and I dialed, and I dialed, and very soon we had a minyan, exactly 10 men, and there was a Mincha Marav minyan. Because Zadie told me he would never let a day go by without a minyan. If someone had to say Kaddish, it was going to happen. And when I go to Passaic now and see how this community has blossomed, everyone has to recognize that it was his hishtadlus and work that made it possible. And somehow he did it all. He tended to his grieving members, took his grandson to a football game, and still made sure that this community had a minyan all in one day. And he did it effortlessly. Another quick memory of high school. Gemara Shir was something that didn't excite me and many of my friends, so we would often skip or not pay attention. Unfortunately, we still wanted to get into top schools, so we needed to do well on our Gemara Bechinas because they went into our grade point average. So before every single Gemara test, I would gather my derelict gang of future Ivy Leaguers in my dining room, and Zadie would come in, sit down at the table, and say, "What are we learning?" And we would tell him, Sukkah, Lulav HaGazal, Kedushin. He would open up the Gemara, and for 3 or 4 hours, he would patiently teach us a month's worth of Gemara. Okay? Always, Fashtes, you understand, you're going to do well, you got it, made us repeat it back to him. We weren't worthy. And my friends were always amazed that Zadie can just walk in, no preparation, open up the Gemara, and he'll know exactly which Ron or Tosos was going to be on the test, because we didn't know to tell him what was being prepared, because we weren't there. And the only thing that Zadie demanded is we had to get above a 95. And if we didn't, and we had to report back, he was going to waste his time with us the next week. And we all did. Several of those friends texted me this memory this morning, the same fond memory. And one of them actually reminded me of a side story that I forgot about. He said in our junior year, we were getting ready for the SATs, and back then we had these flashcards with words, difficult words that would be on the SATs, and words like abnegation or diaphanous and expiate, and we know some of them. And he came in and he said, "What are you guys doing now? What are you wasting?" He always asked, "What are you wasting your time with?" He thought they were baseball cards, and we told him. And he said, "All right, try me." And we went through the entire thing, and he knew every single word. And mind you, English was his fourth language, right? He grew up in Poland, and Yiddish, and Hebrew. And I once asked him, "Why didn't you use his big words in speeches?" And he looked at me and said, "You know, I'm not trying to impress people. I'm trying to teach people and connect with people." And I'll tell you, even though we were all not worthy of it, he never once made us feel like the complete fools we were for never paying attention in class. Just a couple of more quick memories. In my first year in Israel, I finally began to get my act together just a little bit. I'm still working on it. And I began to learn a little bit, culminating in a siyum that winter of Maseches Sota. My first ever siyum on any Seder Gemara. And I planned a very small siyum on a Thursday night in Yeshiva. I remember my friend David Rudisky going out to buy some baguettes for the boys that were there. And it was going to be short and sweet, but something that I was proud of, but it wasn't that big of a deal. And just moments before I was going to begin, the door to the base measures opened. I'm sorry. The door to the base manager's open, and in walked my Zadie. He must have been close to 70, and he was as regal as ever. And when you see in a movie, the entire room fell to a hush, and it was like everyone stopped. And all the rabbis ran over to greet him and to welcome him. There's no way I could ever explain to you what this meant to me. Here, Zadie was someone that never traveled. He couldn't leave Bobby alone. It had to be of utmost importance. And here, I was someone who had rejected every overture to learning that Zadie had made. He had made it so easy for me. And finally, I decided to learn an insignificant amount of Torah compared to what he has done in his life. And he decided that he was going to come all the way to Israel to show me that what I achieved was something that was worth celebrating. The rest of the weekend together with Zadie and Yerushalayim is a blur, but it was, I just remember, one of the most special periods of time, a few days of my life. And that was my Zadie. As I got older, I realized that Zadie had an almost pathological disdain for wasting time, while having an utter contempt for a job done poorly. The two went hand in hand, and someone who didn't adequately prepare inevitably would waste Zadie's time and would feel his wrath. The running joke in our family was who was going to drive Zadie home early from his own funeral, because he was definitely not going to have patience to listen to more than one hesped. We decided it would probably be Sachi. Every year during camp, as Josh mentioned, Zadie would drive up unannounced to camp, Camp Hillel, bring with him the sports section, which he knew I loved, and a snack. He would spend no more than 5 minutes with me, ask me if I was good. I would say yes, tell me Bobby loved me, and then turn around and say, it's time to go, he's wasted enough time. But he said it in a way that I knew he loved me, because he drove all the way out there, as Josh said. Always a highlight for me. Weddings of his grandchildren, bar mitzvahs, he didn't have patience. He could be home learning, he could be do something else. And we all knew that it was going to be one of our turns to take him home. But it didn't mean that he loved us any less. He just valued time. Which brings me to the thing that I also admired about Zadie, is he absolutely always called it like he saw it. As Josh said before, he was as tough of a judge as he was going to come. He did not see any benefit of giving somebody false praise. And I had great pity for people who had to give Daf Yomi unprepared, especially on a day after a Red Sox loss. No prisoners would be taken in those days. I think it did, as the rabbi said, elevate people's preparation. I think maybe I got a little bit of this, as some people have told me I could be a little rough around the edges with dealing with other people. The highest praise that Zadie would mete out to his grandchildren were two simple words. Not bad. That was it. That was the pinnacle from Zadie. Report card straight A's, not bad. A medical school graduation, not bad. A superb Dvar Torah from Josh, not bad. I could really only remember a couple of exceptions. I remember when he met Ariane for the first time. After she had left, I tried to be a wise guy, and I looked at him and I said, not bad. And he looked back smiling and he said, you did good, very good. I remember him having a similar reaction to my Harvard Business School graduation, one of the few times I can remember Zadie traveling when Bobby wasn't well at all. But to us, getting a not bad was worth so much more than the inflated laudatory excellence and great jobs that are often thrown around today. To get a not bad from Zadie, you know that you worked hard, accomplished something, did it in a timely fashion, and deserved his praise. I'd like to wrap this up, but I do want to make one mention of a change in his life that happened about 15 years ago, after my grandmother passed away. Zadie retired from the pulpit, and he moved to Teaneck, which was such a wonderful, wonderful thing for all of us that live here and our families. But it was something that was extremely difficult for my grandfather. Given he no longer had a shul that he had to run, and he no longer had to take care of Bobby, which was a full-time job, he pretty much had 16 more hours a day free that he had to figure out what to do with. And he chose to spend 13 hours of those days learning Torah, and about 3 hours a day watching his beloved Red Sox or his Giants. And of course, there was this incredibly hard year or two where Zadie was obsessed with the show 24, starring Kiefer Sutherland. And every Tuesday at 9 o'clock, We would gather as a family in my parents' living room where we would watch with him. And inevitably, when it was over, he would say, "Why do you guys make me watch this? What a waste of time." But we all watched and we shared together. And there was a transformation that happened when he moved in Teaneck. The pulpit rabbi became a candy man. And all the kids went to him for candy. And the daily giver of Daf Yomi became a part of a rotation. He was more relaxed. And the not bads even became a bouquet of I love yous and great jobs meted out loosely to the great grandchildren. My brother Donnie reminded me that when we made his 90th birthday party celebration, he admitted to us that after Bobby died, he was lonely and retired, and he was depressed because he thought that his best years were behind him. He was just going to play out the string. But this is where I'd like to thank a certain group of people, the community and friendship and respect that the boys in the back, the Daf Yomi crew showed him, gave him new purpose and a new love of life. Yes, he had us as a family, but all of you that showed him such respect and friendship, I would like to thank you on behalf of our entire family for all that you did for my grandfather over the last 15 years. And for those of you who took it from him a little too harshly when you weren't prepared, just know he only gives it that hard to people that he loves. But the greatest pride that my Zaidi had were really in his two sons. My uncle, Rav Pinky, a Talmud Chacham in his own right, courageously following in the giant shadows and footsteps of his father as a rabbi of a startup shul on the other side of Teaneck, which blossomed into a bedrock of our community. Pinky, he may not have always expressed it verbally, but when I would watch him listen to you speak, especially when you gave a great one, especially when you said some new Torah, it really made him smile. And my own father, also a musmach who pursued a life in business, there was no greater joy anyone in the world could provide my Zaidi than when my father was davening on the Yom HaMerai. The marriage of Nusach and his Ivris and his powerful beauty of his voice in the most important tefillos of the year was something that brought unbridled joy and pride to my Zaidi. And I would just watch him when I was davening, seeing his face, his eyes closed, but his lips turned upwards every single year, even up until the last year. And of course, they will be upset at me for bringing this up, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention the incredible pantheon level of kibbutz shown to Zaidi by his two sons over these last 15 years. From the moment Zaidi moved in, my father subjugated his every need, waking up at the crack of dawn, because that's when Zaidi wanted to get up, making sure that Zaidi's life was lived in the most comfortable and regimented way to Zaidi's exact liking, never thinking about his own needs, often putting his own health and well-being and rest in peril. And Pinky, you were an equal partner. And I'm not going to belabor the point because I don't want either of you to get upset at me, but just know that all of us, all of your children, have noticed the example that you set, silently and without fanfare. And it was noticed, and we thank you for what you did for Zaidi. And Pinky, the way you anguished over every last ounce of his care was painful to watch, but I hope you know that you did absolutely everything right, and then some. And to my Aunt Adassa and my mother, Zaidi didn't view you as daughter-in-laws, but as daughters he never had. And that is because you both selflessly took care of and loved Zaidi like he was your own daughter. And for me personally, he told me once, I was his 50th birthday present. And he was born just 2 weeks before he turned 50. And I got to live to see my Zaidi running with my own son, my great-grandson, who embraced the opportunity, unlike his idiot father, in a way that I never chose to experience. And it was only 4 short years ago that Zaidi, you were able to come to Israel with the entire family to celebrate Sukkot, the chag none of us will ever forget. And just 2 years ago, great-grandson, grandson, son and father, 4 generations, all to your great amazement, Zaidi, eating kosher lamb chops at Yankee Stadium together as the Yankees played the Red Sox, though you made me bring out the Mashiach and gave him a real fire to make sure the food was really kosher before we ate it. What a bracha. Almost 44 years it took me to realize this, but I know it true. Zaidi, It wasn't me that was the gift. You were the gift. The gift to all of us, your congregants, your friends, your family, and to me. So speaking on behalf of all of my siblings, and I know that we all know, in singular as a relationship that Josh had with him, Josh, Sari, Dov, Yosef, Donnie, Esther, Mordechai, Sachi, and myself. He loved each of us. And Sarachana. Sorry. I didn't even say Sarachana here. I apologize. I know I'm going to hear about this for a long time. I would like to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for granting us the gift of the greatest Zaidi. It's impossible for us now to manage life without you in it, because you have always been there. But we are grateful and thankful for the many, many years that we had to spend with you, and we will miss you more than you can imagine. Thank you.
We call upon Ray Weinberger's eldest grandson, Joshua, to say a few words.
Just my parents, my dear Uncle Pinky, my great Uncle Psachia, Maradasa Rai Brzezinski. A few years ago, on the occasion of my grandfather's 90th birthday, the family had a celebration event over Shabbos. It was a beautiful event with my grandfather's children, children-in-law, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, his brother, my great Uncle Psachia, and his son and daughter-in-law were all there. Baruch Hashem, the opportunity to share the time together. At the time, a number of people spoke, and I had the opportunity to speak about my grandfather. And I also had the chance to speak. And I spoke about what I learned from him in so many ways, my relationship with him, and what I cherish so much. I tried to be open and effusive about my feelings about Zaidi, but at the end of the day, something held me back, whether it was my own discomfort or my grandfather's. Then Zaidi would be uncomfortable. I held back. So I'm going to try to finish now what I started a few years ago. I know I won't do it justice, but I will try. Zaidi was my teacher, and I always tried to be his student. Now this may sound trite, or not even so different from most of the people in this room's relationship with him. After all, he was a rabbi, he was a teacher of people by profession. But I always felt the good fortune, the extreme good fortune, due to no merit of my own, of being born when I was, as Zaidi's oldest grandchild, and the time and circumstances under which I was able to develop my relationship with him, giving me what I feel a singular perspective. Zaidi was fond of quoting the Ramban, both Al HaTorah and the Sefer HaMitzvos, of the special mitzvah of a grandfather to teach a grandchild Torah. And I actively felt throughout my life being the beneficiary of my grandfather's enthusiasm to fulfill this mitzvah, which was so dear to him. So I'll take a few minutes to just share with you some of the things that Zaidi taught me. The first and primary thing that Zaidi taught me was Torah. He was and remains my first and primary Rebbe in Chavrusa. In fact, the entire prism of our relationship was of and through learning Torah. We learned all parts of Torah together, beginning when I was a little child, through adulthood, Chumash, Nach, Mishnah, Gemara, Rishonim, Achronim, Lamdis, Halacha, Chassidus, philosophy, Jewish history. There was no part of Torah that Zaidi wasn't proficient in, and there was no part of Torah he wasn't interested in teaching me. Zaidi taught me how to learn. From the youngest of age, he not only taught me content, but the emphasis on the precision in reading, precision understanding, no laziness in thought, no superficiality of thought. His refrain to me when we would learn, regardless how well I thought I understood something, you understand? Pashtes? Zaidi taught me what to learn. I remember one summer, which I'll discuss more in a little bit, we had a daily chavrusa learning the third parak of Kedushin. I remember in the middle of one sugya, which in itself was a tangent from the main topic of the Gemara that we were learning, all of a sudden stopped and said, now we need to learn the Taz and the Shach's introduction to Yoredeya that discuss this sugya, which, and this was, you know, before the footnotes in Art Scroll and the Masifta Gemara. Needlessly, I would say I was astounded how he was aware that the Shachar and the Kriyas HaKesef discusses an entirely irrelevant sugya at that point, but it was there. Another occasion, I remember asking a question, and I still remember what the question was, and he responded to me that the Taz discusses this point, and he mentioned in passing that he had not seen that Taz in about 50 years. Zaidi taught me to have the self-confidence and aspirations in learning. While Zaidi was a perfectionist and demanded excellence from himself and others, he also believed that you should be encouraged that you could do it. I remember in a rare Shabbos when Zaidi was in Tina, because he usually was in Passaic when I was about 10 years old, he came home with me from Shabbos Mincha and decided that day that I should learn how to lane. He was taken by the young Balkori at Mincha and wanted me to get a head start in becoming an excellent Balkori myself. Mind you, I was 3 years away from my bar mitzvah. He taught me how to lane that Shabbos. And that was the beginning of a long, lifelong career of laning for me. Fast forward a few years, and that same boy was the Balkari that day. Now was back from yeshiva over Yantiv, and Zaidi again happened to be there, and he gave a shir between Mincha Marav. To me, a not-so-discerning 14 or 15-year-old, was a very impressive shir, and from the reaction of the crowd, seems like most people thought the same. Zaidi, as Rabbi Brzezinski said, had his head buried in his hands and his eyes closed, and to me, after the shir, was clear that he was not impressed. I asked him why. He said, of course I want you to be able to handle giving a shir like that, working through all the makoros in this farm. But the shir was superficial. He said he had higher aspirations for that. Fast forward a few more years, and I'm relatively newly married, learning a kolo, giving a weekly Gemara Ian shir. In the world before the ubiquitous use of email, I had handwritten a letter to Zaidi, answering a Rambam. Zaidi wrote me back in longhand in his inimitable style, first carefully working through my idea, what he liked, what he didn't, and where he thought my creative license went too far. But then there was one more paragraph at the very end, in which he wrote, actually, I just reread it, and it's actually pretty good. But he also taught me the limits of that confidence. Over my 45-year relationship with Zaidi, I can only remember two times when he got upset at me. When I was 11 years old, my grandparents took me to Israel for the summer. Zaidi was going for one of his congregants' grandson and also attended an RCA convention. This trip was eye-opening. It was my first time ever in Israel. We learned together every day. I remember I met Rav Avadia Yosef for the only time in my life. He was there at the convention. That summer we learned Maseches Megillah. I remember sitting in the lower level of the then La Rome Hotel. When we got up to the Gemara, the Gemara says that the Kodesh HaKadosh was 20 amos long and the Aron with its poles was 20 amos long, but the Aron took up no space. I said, that just makes no sense. He looked at me with astonishment and reprimanded me for saying that. Remember, I was 11 years old, and we were voluntarily learning during the summer. But he said that was not appropriate, and he let me know. Moving forward again, a couple decades with Maseches Megillah. A few years ago, a number of friends and I learned the Masechta in anticipation of Purim and wrote up some of our Chidushei Torah. I was particularly proud of one idea, an obscure takiv relating to the halachos of writing the Megillah that people usually don't spend time on. I sent it to Zaidi for his review, expecting nothing but rave reviews. He called me to tell me that I forgot or didn't know that the Brisker Oven directly addresses my question with his own chiddush. Zaidi talked about the importance of integrity in Torah halacha. Once I had a halacha question that involved a personal monetary issue where I felt someone had wronged me, for the only time I remember, Zaidi refused to answer my question because he feared he would be biased in my favor and would not offer his halachic opinion. I mentioned there were only two times that Zaidi was upset with me. One I mentioned before. The second was another time where I had a shiloh where I, on my own, suggested a kula to Zaidi, which I should have known better really had no basis. There too, he was clear telling me that I was wrong. These were all the things he told me explicitly, but there was a myriad of implicit lessons. Zaidi, of course, taught us the value of time. When I was growing up, my grandmother and grandfather lived in Passaic, and Zaidi and Bobby would frequently come to visit. Zaidi would open the door and his booming voice say, hello. And after about 3 minutes, he would say, Joshi, I'm wasting my time. Get me a Gemara. One time I remember Zaidi forgot his reading glasses. And he asked me to go to the car and get my grandmother's reading glasses so he could learn. And the image of Zaidi sitting there, learning with the Gemara, oblivious to the world, and looking a little bit silly in my grandmother's reading glasses is seared in my mind. His value on the preciousness of time was unbelievable. I still remember sitting at my Sheva Brachos on our Purim Suda in Williamsburg, and after a few minutes, Zaidi was getting anxious, and I remember my uncle Pinky saying to him, says, you can calm down, it's your grandson Sheva Brachos, you don't have to rush. But in teaching us the value of time, he taught us a much more important lesson, how much he loved us. See, Zadie wouldn't waste 5 minutes, yet he felt it worthwhile to take the time to drive to half hour to Teaneck to visit for 15 minutes to turn around and get back to his own show for Mincha Maariv. And this lesson was really driven home when he would drive for 2+ hours to the mountains during the summer to visit us for a few short minutes, drop off some candy, and be on his way. That was not a waste of time for him. As I got older, the lessons changed and matured too. As I was involved in Tzurchei Tzibur and contentious issues would arise, I would speak to him. Of course, his advice was always to take the path of least resistance, to be Marbe Shalom Ba'olam, never to be territorial and always welcoming of others, a true embodiment of Oy Brios Makarvim LaTorah. One area out of public view where the lessons were nothing of short of awe-inspiring was how he cared for my grandmother, Aleha Shalom. Unfortunately, she had many periods of life when she was not well. And for a variety of reasons and circumstances, there were a number of times when I was there with just the two of them, my two grandparents, when she was not well. The care and dignity and grace with which he took care of her is impossible to describe in words. There's so much more I could say, and I simply cannot overstate the profound influence and importance of Zadie in my life. But I'll leave you with this other point. With all of this, with his superlative skills, with his rabbinic lifestyle, with everything else, he was also an amazing, ordinary grandfather and would do anything for his grandchildren. I remember playing catch with him in the backyard, him with the baseball mitt and all, taking us to ball games, pizza, ice cream. I remember he took me to the doctor many times, tell us bedtime stories and more. I remember my first year in YU. That was the year that Rav Salvechik passed away, and Rav Schechter gave a hesped for his Rebbe and described when the Rav would come in sometimes on Monday morning and you would have missed Kriyas HaTorah in the morning and then they would later have a Kriyas HaTorah in the afternoon at Mincha, so you wouldn't miss it. Following Rav Chaim Shita, the Kriyas HaTorah was the Chovas Gavra, and he described like how the scene was just in his mind, with tears in his eyes, nothing other than a Kabbalas HaTorah. I will tell you that my own mini version of this, the summer between my first and second years in Keren B'Yavne, was something of a me'ein olam haba for me. I took a couple early summer school classes during the day and would drive right to Passaic. And Zadie would take me every day to the pizza store and he would watch me while I would eat. And then we would go back to his house and learn B'Gomar B'Chavrusa B'Ian all afternoon for hours. At the end of the Sefer, he gave me a Tosfos Rid on Kedushin, which we had used quite a bit over the summer. On the inside cover, there was a description from about 47 years earlier from his brother Psachi, who had given him the Sefer as a present. And now there was a second inscription when he gave to me as a present. As the Gemara in Kedushin says, "Kol Malamed Ben Beno Torah, Malal Akasuv Kilo Kibla Mehar Sinai." And I could say learning Torah with him was nothing short of a true experience of Kabbalah HaTorah. His transmission of the Torah was so pure and so beautiful. Zadie, I love you more than I can express, and my debt of gratitude to you is more than I can ever repay. I was more fortunate than I ever deserved for you to be my teacher, and I will always strive to be worthy of being your student.
Rabbi Weinberger's beloved brother, who has Dabich lost two brothers just in the last few months, Chvod Rabbi Psachya Weinberger.
After I was informed that my older brother is no longer amongst the living, I received yet another call asking me whether I will say a few words I don't know when I gave it even a thought. I said, by all means, I owe it to him. So I stand here, a younger brother to Rav Shlema. Your illustrious rabbi has touched on many of the points that I would normally try to deal with, and yet I feel entirely out of place to speak very promising words about my late brother. I don't feel it's for me to say, and there are plenty of people who had been touched by his life for themselves and their children and grandchildren who should be able to tell us who Rav Shlema Weinberg was. Ashrei ha'ish. We heard those words from the rabbi. Ashrei ha'ish asher lo holach ba'atzas ha'shorim uv'derech ha'tom lo yomod v'moshav leitzen lo yoshav. Kim b'sayir atzarenoi chefzoi happy is the one who has not sat with the wicked. Kim b'teiras Hashem. Rather, that one's delight is in the Torah of the Lord, meditating in God's Torah day and night. In my last few visits with my brother, I had brought to him a visit from my son in Chicago. I brought to him my daughter from California. And it was written all over our faces that perhaps the glory of our family, the pride we took in this love, was coming to a conclusion. Some years ago, Yeshiva Sita Teva Das came up with some kind of a program for the three Weinbergers, a cheshbon of three, and they listed the three. I am the middle one. As I stand here and as I fight for some words, in the back of my mind I say, why am I standing? Baruch Hashem, I've had two wonderful, wonderful brothers. And Rav Shlema was a Baal Midas Tevas. He had in himself some wonderful, wonderful tributes. His community out west, his community back here, and in these latter years of life here, I've met people in this shul who embrace me for no other reason than I'm a brother of Rabbi Weinberg. I had some outstanding Rosh Yeshivas in my life, that I called my Rebbe, my teacher, my inspiration. The truth can be said now that when I was really troubled, when I was really in the dark, I would pick up a phone and call Schleimer. And as two brothers, as we grew up as children, he would listen, and usually in a matter of a minute, he would offer me a solution or a halacha that made my day, that made my life easier. Unbeknown to my kehillah, he was their rabbi too. For many a times, the direction that I offered was his inspiration and his teaching. I realize there are many others to speak, and I'm the wrong person to speak about my brother. Yehi zichrei baruch, may his memory ever be for a blessing.
Final words of Hesped from Rabbi Weinberger's beloved son, Itzi. I think everyone who spoke here today, from Rabbi Brzezinski, my children, my uncle, he should live and be well, has represented my father very well, and it would be difficult to add to what they say, but I want to just say a few words from my perspective, and if I am repeating what others have said, so you just know it was true, because I didn't write anything with them. Those of you who knew my father saw a Rav who was from a previous generation, yet who brought all the modern people into his world with a feeling of genuine Ahavas Yisrael. He learned with the Gedolim of another era, but he was comfortable with the people he interacted in this modern world. My father, Rav Shlomo ben Harav Yehoshua, was first and foremost driven by the sweetness he found in the study of Torah. V'harev no Hashem Elokeinu es divrei Torahtecha, to make sweet divrei Torah. That's what my father literally felt. He maintained that every free minute was not to be neglected or taken for granted. He loved learning and teaching Balabatim, B'nai Torah, and his little grandchildren. My father's demeanor was calm and pleasant, save for the excitement he exhibited when learning and making certain that whomever he was engaged with left the blot understanding the correct shot. He was engaged as a father, husband, grandfather, and great-grandfather, enjoying his family, and like any Zaidi, getting great nachas from his grandchildren. As you heard, he studied at Yeshiva Torah Vadas and was among the first Talmidim that established the Beis Medrash Elyon in Muncie. He spent over 50 years as a Rav, a leader of congregations in Long Island, Portland, Oregon, and 45 years in Passaic, New Jersey. He told me, and this was always very interesting to me, that his beloved and most learned Rosh Yeshivas told him that he and his peers, his classmates, when leaving the yeshiva, would find a barren land of Yiddishkeit in America. After the horrors and destruction of European Jewry, they told my father and his fellow Talmidim that it was incumbent on him and his peers
to engage the Jewish population and attempt to build a pathway for even the non-observant to see the beauty and truth of Yiddishkeit. He took on this task knowing that whatever he accomplished would help to be the stepping stones to the future of American Jewry. He loved and respected all people and all Jews, whatever their religious observance was or was not. He came from a long line of Rabbanim and Hasidic leaders. He always tried, within the strict confines of halacha, to find a heter, not always an iser. He taught me, when I was learning Herdea, he taught me it's much easier to aser something or make chumras than to seek a way when it might be possible to be matur it. He said it would take a formidable intellectual challenge to do this, but only when it was appropriate. He was a man who loved his congregation and the responsibilities that came with it. And his congregants had great respect and fondness for their Rav. He was very well read in conversations on numerous topics. But there was nothing to compare with learning a Blat Gemara and going through the Rishonim and Acharonim. My father left his family a Yerusha of being a mensch, respecting your fellow man, following the Torah and the laws of the land, and having yashrus in all aspects of life. He leaves behind countless hours of learning and teaching others. He loved his family, Eretz Yisrael, and the gift of Torah he carried with him. My father was Zocher to Arichas Yamim, but the last few years he needed real assistance of many of his family and friends who had deep affection for him. The men of the table in the back of the Beis Medrash and the members of the Daf Yomi would fall over themselves to assist my father when his physical stress waned. He was fond, very fond of these true friends. But I want you to know, even though his physical strength waned, he had full and complete intellectual capacity until his last day. There were so many friends and community members who came to our home, and more recently my father's home, to make a minyan for him on Friday night in Motzai Shabbos, when he couldn't walk any longer. I thank the many dedicated physicians and friends who had true love for my father and shared their time and professional expertise on his behalf. And my brother, Rav Pinchas Weinberger, and his family should be blessed for his gentle and true care he gave my father, together with my dear nephew, Zaki. A tremendous hakoras hatov to my wife, Mona, who made all kinds of meals for my father to try to entice him to eat even when he couldn't eat. She treated him like a father, and he held Mona in the highest esteem and treated her like a daughter. Finally, our family extends extreme thanks to Rabbi Pruzansky and Congregation B'nai Shurin for affording my father the covet of having his Labayan as Fadim in his final shul. B'nai Shurin. And I must ask my father Mechila for all the times I was not there for him and for anything I might have done incorrectly. Love you very much.